Talking Newspaper issue. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of April 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 16th of April 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell and Ken Clemenson. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Don't Close Our Road, Brine Speaks Out Over Silver Hill, and closure of car park will not cause a problem. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Don't close our road. Residents fear closure will clog up main routes and create rat runs. A campaign to stop the closure of a major Winchester road gathered momentum, but sparked a backlash from a rival group of residents. More than 100 people joined a Chronicle photo call urging transport chiefs to keep Andover Road open when they build a new route through the Barton Farm development. Objectors, including local taxi firm Wessex Cars, fear it will clog up main routes into the city and send A-road traffic through Littleton and Hairstock. But a handful of supporters attended the demonstration to warn keeping the road open would do the same to Wick, supporting what would be a stretch of car-free cycle path. Barton Farm developer Carla Holmes already has consent to pedestrianise a stretch of the busy commuter route, diverting thousands of cars a day through a 2,000-home new estate. Paul Twelvetree, a prospective councillor who launched the campaign with fellow Conservative councillor James Burns, said he was absolutely stunned by the turnout and called on Carla to reopen discussion. They need to engage with us and talk to us, he said. The weight of public opinion that I've had has been overwhelmingly against the closed road. Showing that they are prepared to listen can only benefit them. We'll become a rat run, he added. Traffic will flow like water through Littleton and Hairstock. It's going to be horrendous. From Hampshire County Council can still decide against a stopping up order on Andover Road. But Rob Westwood, Carla's project director for Barton Farm, has previously said there are other ways to close the road and implement their planning permission. Councillor Burns is said to discuss the issue with Mr. Westwood and Steve Tilbury, Winchester City Council's corporate director, on Monday. But he has accused County Council Transport Chief Sean Woodward, who told the Chronicle earlier this month that the campaign was unlikely to change anything, of prejudging the fresh application he hopes Carla will bring. In an email to Councillor Woodward, Councillor Burns said, if Hampshire County Council are seen to be shutting the door on my residence, then I'm not sure how I can help you restore your corporate reputation in their eyes. I'm not sure if Carla's can ever be restored, given their lack of respect for local views. Meanwhile, Lib Dem councillors have hit back at the Conservative-led campaign. Councillor Anne Weir said, we challenge the Andover Road campaigners on their vision for transportation and mobility in Winchester. How do they propose we get more people out of their cars, create space for a good bus service to develop in their place, and encourage more of us to walk and cycle?
Brine speaks out over Silver Hill. The Conservative candidate defending his seat as Winchester MP has questioned whether affordable housing should be built as part of the Silver Hill development. Steve Brine said residents would be kept up all night by student noise if such homes were built. Low-cost housing has been a hugely contentious issue for the £165 million city centre project since the developer, TIAA Henderson Real Estate, dropped all 100 affordable flats from its proposals last year. Mr. Brine has kept a relatively low public profile over the controversial project since his election in 2010, arguing that it's an issue for local government, not Parliament. But he told the Hampshire Chronicle, "Is it actually right that there should be affordable housing back around the car park in the middle of a city centre development, surrounded by expensive shops and bars where students wake you up all night? I'm not sure that's the best place for affordable housing." Mr. Brine also defended Winchester City Council's fantastic affordable housing record, citing 880 discount homes set to be built at Barton Farm and Pitt Manor. His main election rival, Liberal Democrat Jackie Porter, said he was completely prejudging the people who might rent city centre flats. Young workers renting expensively on the outskirts of town are, quote, "desperate for the chance to go into the centre of Winchester," quote unquote, she said. "It means better access to jobs, better access to social life, and often better quality of accommodation. Winchester has got people going through it, but actually, generally, they're not very rowdy. You do hear noise because it's people enjoying themselves. But really, there are far worse places to be staying than in the centre of Winchester." UKIP candidate Martin Lyon questioned why the threshold for affordable housing is up to 80% of Winchester's high house prices. He added, "What Steve Brine's saying is one thing in private and one thing in public. He knows that some people in his own party quiver at the thought of affordable housing being put into the centre of Winchester. They think of a certain type of people moving into those areas, which is what Steve Brine is alluding to, I think." The Hampshire Chronicle approached Winchester's three remaining parliamentary candidates for comment, but did not receive any response.
Closure of car park will not cause a problem. Winchester will have no problem coping with the closure of Friars Gate multi-storey car park, the council was told. Councillor Ernie Jeffs, portfolio holder for Communities and Transport, said the loss of 131 substandard spaces would be compensated by the other central parking spaces. He said in a written answer to the council that the city centre still has 2,829 spaces, as well as the 1,623 at the park and ride sites. There are five central car parks nearby: Upper Brook Street, Middle Brook Street, The Brooks, Colebrook Street and Cheswell Multistory. He added, "It should also be noted that with the exception of Christmas, the Friars Gate car park is rarely ever full, and we are confident that there is sufficient parking elsewhere to cope with its closure, including when events like the farmers' market are held." The issue was raised by Lib Dem leader Leslie Learney, who said that the closure had raised considerable concern to our smaller retailers and residents at a time when the Silver Hill judgment has created uncertainty about the future of Winchester's town centre. Councillor Jeffs said Friars Gate, built in the 1970s, was now so badly corroded that it had reached the end of its economic life. Many of the floors had already been closed because of safety fears. The Upper Brook Street car park is scheduled to be replaced by the relocated St Clement's Surgery.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Baverstock, Evelyn Baverstock, on the 4th of April, aged 91. Cottingham, William Edward Joseph, known as Bill Cottingham, in hospital on the 11th of April, aged 79. Ellen, Margaret Elizabeth Ellen, on the 3rd of April, aged 70. Ford, Tony Ford, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 11th of April, aged 83. James, Patricia James, on the 4th of April. Lloyd, Patricia Joyce Lloyd, on the 11th of April, aged 89. Newman, Paul Scott Newman, on the 30th of March. Plackett, Doreen, nay Whitehorn Plackett, on the 5th of April, at Abbeygate Care Home, Winchester, aged 87. And Wetherall, Shirley Ann Wetherall, on the 7th of April, aged 76. Next, we have Christian comment.
And this week, it's written by Paul Kennedy, and he entitles it A Crisis of Solidarity. Society today displays a crisis of solidarity, so wrote the Archbishop of Canterbury in a collection of essays entitled On Rock or Sand. These essays explore the undergirding principles of our society and whether these contribute to firm foundations. For Welby, solidarity is rooted in, quote, the inherent dignity of each person outside and beyond any economic value, and in the commonality of the human journey, end of quote. Solidarity is, however, undermined by two principal contemporary concerns. Firstly, we live in a consumeristic society where a person's value is associated with their economic potential. And secondly, our society is individualistic, so undermining an understanding of our common human journey through life. Other concerns, including low wages, areas of economic deprivation, and inequalities of wealth or education, stem from this lack of solidarity, a reluctance to seek the good of other people over our own self-satisfaction. These concerns can be shared by people of any or no faith. So what is a specifically Christian approach to contemporary society? A starting point could be the belief that we are created in the image of God, with equal dignity and worth, and the potential to flourish. Being created in God's image makes us people drawn to relationships, just as the Christian understanding of God is a relationship, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, so closely intertwined that the three persons still only form one being. To be human is to be in relationship, firstly with God, the source of being and inspiration beyond us, secondly with one another, so that we recognise that we can only flourish in an environment where others are encouraged to flourish, and thirdly, in relationship with the environment. The environment is not something to be exploited, but nurtured and managed for the benefit of all creation. Any flourishing relationship has both imagination and compassion. We need empathy with our fellow men and women in different circumstances, both in this country and beyond. Empathy for parents in Nigeria who, after more than a year, are still missing their kidnapped student daughters. And empathy for someone using food banks because their 0 hours contract provided too little work to put food on the table. Perhaps today's greatest challenge is the imagination to feel for the other person. In an environment of electronic communications and social media, it is possible to work with people we never meet. Relationships become oddly truncated, and the person struggling with religious oppression in Syria is just too far beyond our imagining.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So there are 10 letters in total, and we'll start off with the first.
And this first one, which is entitled No Witch Hunt, We Just Want Answers, is from a group of 11 people whose names I'll read at the end. Sir, we must take issue with a number of points made by Simon Eden, Chief Executive, Winchester City Council, in his letter in response to our demand, Hampshire Chronicle, March the 19th, that City Council officials should be held to account for any bad advice given by them in connection with the Silver Hill saga. First, we reject the suggestion that we are conducting a witch hunt of any kind, nor are we attempting to apportion blame before troubling to ascertain the facts. It's quite the opposite. We expressed support for the Lloyd-Jones review so that it could establish exactly what happened and who was involved in the critical decisions. Only in that way can those responsible, reasonably, be held to account or exonerated, as is appropriate. Second, he suggests that we are jumping to conclusions to say that the project has been mismanaged. The fact that the review has been established in the first place is, by definition, an acknowledgement that the project has been mismanaged in one form or another. If the council does not believe that something has gone wrong, why is it spending tens of thousands of pounds on investigating it? Third, and most importantly, we must remind Mr. Eden that the Chronicle reported on February the 26th, quote, Councillor Pearson told the Chronicle on Monday that it would be unreasonable for officers to be held accountable if the review finds that they gave bad advice, unquote. So unless Mr. Eden is alleging a major misquotation, we cannot understand how he can justify his claim, specifically in relation to our letter, that this has never been the leader of the council's position. Following Mr. Eden's intervention, we renew our plea to voters in the city council elections to require candidates of all parties to pledge that they will hold officials to account for their conduct and their advice, including respecting the spirit and the letter of the recent High Court judgment, February the 11th. Councillors must be the critical friends of council officials, not their compliant collaborators. That letter is from the group of people whose names are Edward Fennell, John Andrews, Hazel Ogumbar, Nigel Bradshaw, Julian Chisholm, Jill Davies, Jonathan Greatrix, Bill Hode, Caroline Scott, Tony Walker, Martin Wilson.
And the second letter on the same subject is written by Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who initiated the High Court action. And it's headed, Review Could Be a Meaningless Exercise. Sir, when on February the 19th the new leader of the City Council announced that there would be a review into the Silver Hill debacle, everyone thought, fair enough, let's have an independent inquiry into what went wrong, take stock, then decide how to go forwards. On March the 18th, we found out about Henderson's plan to go back to the 2009 scheme. This was the scheme that they said wasn't financially viable, which was why they reduced the affordable housing contribution by over £5 million, revising the scheme in 2014. The effect of Henderson doing this and making the 2004 contract unconditional would be to preempt and prejudice the review and potentially make it a completely meaningless exercise. As I suggested at full council on the 1st of April, in that event the council would look very foolish and the public would be rightly outraged. Fortunately, I was not alone among councillors in thinking that it was a bit odd that the council was acquiescing in a plan that could undermine its independent review. After all, this is the process meant to provide lessons to be learned following the High Court's ruling that the council was in serious breach of procurement regulations. The motion that was passed at full council should at least slow Henderson's cunning plan, if not kibosh it. And at least everyone in the council should be aware of the expectation that the review should be completed before any precipitous actions are taken. Hopefully, after the election, whatever the political makeup of the council, councillors will come together again and make decisions in the best interests of the city rather than in favour of any single developer. And there's written by Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb of Abington.
Tim Bittleston says, advisory sector is thriving on government. Sir, no doubt your article in April the 2nd's Chronicle on advisers will result in quite a response. The advisory sector thrives on government. An industry born out of accounting services has found a gold mine in recent years, providing excellent earnings, in brackets, you should see the day rates, end of bracket, where there is almost no risk to the advisor themselves. The key question is, why do our government institutions feel the need so much on outside opinion? After all, we do have more government executives per capita than anywhere else in the Western world. Business, by comparison, spends a very small sum on outside resources, and this is largely focused on legal and tax services owing to the mercurial and corporate and complex system within which we operate. The private sector couldn't consider such expense as a sure sign of incompetence. Keith House called it a lazy spend. It's certainly a very good tactic to avoid responsibility if something goes wrong. Quote, not my fault. I had bad advice. End of quote. Whichever way you look at it, someone is ducking something. And I would challenge the council to publish a case report where the expense was matched by comparative savings or improved services. I seem to recall that we were told this criminal waste of money was to be stopped. Seems we have been conned again. Andrew Smith and John Coughlin's salaries should be adjusted to reflect their evident levels of competency. That was a free piece of advice from me. Yeah. Tim Bittleston, Abbotsworthy.
Anthony Jones writes about a great report on council consultants. Sir, I simply write to endorse your editorial comment on April the 2nd on the County Council's use of management consultants. An excellent piece of reporting by Rachel Masker. I was just about to write a letter of outrage to your paper when I found that you had done it for me. And why do I have a suspicion, possibly ill-founded, that the report will contain a strong recommendation to continue employing Deloitte to do the work for which we theoretically have already paid. The County Council seems to be trying hard to get back into the pages of private eye. I presume they like the publicity. Anthony Jones, Hinton Ampner, Alsford.
And a similar letter, please. This is written by Derek Pickett. Advice for bankers. Sir, the nation's beloved bankers were asked, what part of your job would you not do if you did not receive a bonus? Well, we now know. They would call in Deloitte to do their job for them. Chronicle, April the 2nd. That's written by Derek Pickett, Ashtree Road, Andover.
Mrs. J.L. Sheridan asks, can't council chiefs tell the time? Sir, a management consultant has been defined as someone who borrows your watch to tell you the time and then walks away with it, as noted in the Chronicle of April the 2nd. Surely at a combined annual salary package of over £424,000, the two top executives of Hampshire County Council must be able to afford a decent watch each. Could it be that they can't actually tell the time? Mrs. J.L. Sheridan, Manor Close, Winnall.
Felicity McElderry writes about the increasing privatisation of the NHS. Sir, with the focus on the health service as an election issue, how many are aware of the increasing privatisation of the NHS? In 2013-14, £18.3 billion of NHS work was advertised to the private sector, with 67% of contracts awarded to non-NHS providers, a 14% increase on a year earlier. The 2012 Health and Social Care Act obliges clinical commissioning groups to put services out to tender. In Hampshire, adult physiotherapy and audiology, elective services such as ear, nose and throat and orthopaedics, GP out-of-hours and wheelchair services are already provided privately. The Centre for Health and Public Interest reports that a conservative estimate of the bureaucratic cost of the marketing process is £4.5 billion per year. It is suggested this could fund the annual £2 billion NHS shortfall and free critical social care for everyone. Making profits for shareholders is not in line with NHS values, yet private firms are allowed to use the NHS logo, so the public are kept in the dark about who is providing their healthcare. For example, Serco, BMI Healthcare and Virgin Care now run over 200 NHS, so-called, services, including many GP surgeries. This trend seems set to increase. 11 private companies, some of which have dubious records in healthcare, have just been awarded a £780 million contract for NHS work. Many are reported to be tax avoiders based outside the UK. The tendering process is shrouded in commercial secrecy. The government trumpets patient choice, yet there seems little information or choice when it comes to how our health services are provided. Over 70 MPs and 140 members of the House of Lords have been listed with recent or current links to private healthcare companies. How easy is it for them to remain impartial when deciding the future of the NHS? The NHS Reinstatement Bill to restore a truly national health service and the democratic accountability of the Secretary of State for how our health service is provided has been introduced to Parliament. Whether it succeeds may depend on the outcome of this election. Felicity McElderry, Dean Lane, Winchester.
Frank Adsett writes, puzzled by letter on renewable energy. Sir, with regards to the James Anderson letter, chronicled March the 26th, concerning renewable energy sources, I am puzzled by some of the conclusions. Whilst my previous letter, chronicled February the 26th, related to the levy on electricity bills, it made no such claim that it covered the whole cost of the renewable energy sources that it supported, as asserted by Mr. Anderson. He has also asserted that supporters of renewable energy do not pay attention to the facts. Could it be that he has now so cruelly fallen into doing just that by himself? That's from Frank Adsett, Manor Road, Durley.
Richard Potts says, little provision for traffic after accidents. Sir, I am writing concerning the situation that arises when there has been a major car accident on a main road or motorway. At present, quite rightly, the emergency services focus their efforts on the scene of the incident, but appear to make little or no provision for the traffic gridlocked for hours on end whilst they clear the site. Certainly some delay is inevitable, but surely, with forward planning, the horrendous journey times of those who are not directly involved could be dramatically reduced. So writes Richard Pott, Wales Street, Winchester.
Fredina Hearn writes about the traffic muddle in the Broadway again. Sir, yet again I witness the traffic muddle in the Broadway. It was almost impossible to walk along the pavement next to the mayor's house. It was packed with travellers and their luggage. It must have been a nightmare for people with pushchairs or for the disabled. I then watched, with amazement and some awe, as the airport bus pulled in next to the local bus stops. After the scramble to load up, the driver executed an impressive 5-point turn to try and get out of the city, not helped by two large tour buses parked outside St. John's Rooms, the cars parked in the middle of the road, the pedestrian crossing, and buses waiting to go up the high street. Come on, Winchester planners, surely you can organise something better than this? Fredina Hearn, Swift Close, Badger Farm.
That concludes the letters. We now have some items of historical interest from 200, 150 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago was August the 8th, 1814. Whatever uncertainty may remain on the subject of war with France will almost be dissipated by the decree inserted in the Monitor of Sunday last. From this, it is apparent, and whatever rational man expected, that while Bonaparte feigned the strongest professions of a desire for peace, he was making most vigorous preparations for war. As soon as he sounded the intentions of the Allies and found them hostile, it was in his interest, of course, to manifest a wish for conciliation, that he might find a pretext for justifying his own conduct by aspersing that of the Allies.
100 years ago, April 17th, 1915. A call is being made to women and girls of leisure in Winchester and district to release men for enlistment for the duration of the war. Applications should be made to the Women's War Service Bureau. The following are invited to place themselves in communication with the Bureau. 1. Women with or without experience, ready to offer whole or part-time, with or without remuneration, willing to work at certain occupations. 2. Employers with work on which they can employ women. And 3. Men wishing to join any branch of His Majesty's forces, but who are unwilling to put their employers in difficulty by doing so.
50 years ago, April the 17th, 1965. Winchester's residents will only be able to get freak reception of BBC Two when it comes to the South in the autumn. As far as BBC Two is concerned, we do not expect Winchester to get a really good reception, and we are not announcing that Winchester will be served from Rowridge, a corporation spokesman said last week. Mr. Alan G., one of the corporation's engineers, said that because of the particular characteristics of the ultra-high frequency, UHF, wave bands on which BBC Two is transmitted, the new channel would have a greatly reduced coverage than that of BBC One.
25 years ago, April the 20th, 1990. Poll tax slammed by local Democrats. Leading local Democrats have slammed the poll tax and the inadequate Labour alternative as being inefficient, unfair and divisive. At the Winchester Liberal Democrats constituency meeting, Westminster spokesman Tony Barron said the scenes from around the county of people taking to the streets in protest at the imposition of the community charge were a damning indictment of the Conservative government's uncaring arrogance. The Labour alternative proposals are a farce and change daily as they realise they have not thought them through, he added. It has taken the 11 years in opposition to come up with nothing.
Now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and that will be followed by First Person.
The Hampshire Chronicle shows that the entitlement of this article, it's our 243rd year. Opinion is divided over diversion plans. That more than 100 people turned out at short notice to take part in a Chronicle photo call about the rerouted Andover Road shows the strength of feeling about the issue. That a smaller group, who support the diversion, also attended, indicates how opinion is divided. The diversion through the western side of Barton Farm was decided a long time ago. The decision will not be revoked because Carla Holmes would have to apply again for planning permission for the whole scheme. Pigs will fly sooner. What this also shows is the depth of anger about controversial local decisions. For Andover Road, read Barton Farm. Read Silver Hill, and in future probably River Park Leisure Centre, Bushfield Camp and Station Approach. There are many people in Winchester who feel alienated and let down by the way they perceive decisions that affect them are taken. Part of the problem is that these days too few people are sufficiently well informed to know what is going on and to get involved at an early enough stage to influence the outcome. A subscription to this newspaper would help. The task of local politicians is to somehow harness this anger and channel it via the democratic process.
First person this week is written by Ronald Allison, and he has entitled it a particularly non-party political column. A chance to begin by cheering you all up. In only 3 weeks from today, we will all be going to vote. We will, won't we? And the apparently never-ending electioneering will be over. And then, if the experts and the pollsters are to be believed, the real fun will begin. If all the forecasters are indeed right, there will be no clear winner on Friday, May the 8th, and the wheeling and dealing to form a coalition government will occupy us as it did 5 years ago. Except that this time there may well be more than three parties involved, and squaring this particular circle may take some time. Our system of governance, without a written constitution, requires one basic condition to be fulfilled. The monarch, also known as the Queen, must have a Prime Minister who can command a majority in the House of Commons. In other words, a leader with sufficient support.
On the Rank Estate. Elizabeth had two brothers, Arthur and Peter, and two sisters, Ida and Dorothy. All except Peter have predeceased her. She also had four stepbrothers and sisters, Edwina, George, Evelyn and William, from Amy's first marriage to William Cross, who died in 1919. Elizabeth was educated at Stanmore School and left to become a telephonist at Winchester's Exchange for several years. At 14, she had met and fallen in love with Dennis, the boy across the road. Eventually, in July 1950, her mother allowed them to marry at Christchurch in Winchester, where Amy had been a member of the congregation. The Salmon family had been members of the Stanmore Evangelical Church, and Elizabeth joined them and was a Sunday school teacher there for 40 years. Dennis was also involved in the youth work. They had a daughter, Joy, now married to Lethan Craddock, and a granddaughter, Justine. However, Elizabeth and Dennis were well known for fostering some 32 babies from 1960 to the 1980s. Elizabeth was later to become a member of the reception team at the original Friarsgate Medical Centre. Latterly, with Dennis, they joined Highcliffe Evangelical Church in St Catherine's Road and again immersed themselves in the promotion of the gospel. Dennis died in October 2012. Elizabeth had been devoted to him for over 60 years, and their faith in God was a great example to the many friends, family and neighbours who attended her Thanksgiving memorial service last Friday. Apart from her immediate family, Elizabeth leaves her brother and sister-in-law, Peter and Jode Marston of Worthy Road, as well as brothers and sisters-in-law from the Salmon side of the family, and an army of nieces and nephews.
A £50 million funding boost for rail service. Rail services in Hampshire will share in a £50 million funding boost that will create thousands of new seats. The Department for Transport and Stagecoach Group have announced extra funding for South West trains that will see smart ticketing introduced across the network. More than 57,000 seats will be created on 73 new evening and weekend services on suburban and mainline routes, and by creating new seats on existing trains. Among the new services will be an early morning train from Southampton to London, which will leave Southampton Central at 5:20 a.m. on weekdays. Journey times are also set to be cut by 10 minutes between Poole, Bournemouth, Southampton and London on Sunday afternoons, while 1,000 seats will be created on the route on Sundays. A 1,400 car parking spaces will be created at 8 of the busiest car parks, with Andover set to be the first to see changes. A new online booking system will be introduced to allow South West Trains customers to use a smart card on London's Oyster card system. Chief Executive of the South West Trains Network Rail Alliance, Tim Shoveler, said, "These exciting changes will deliver the biggest package of customer-focused benefits for years. As well as the expansion of our smart ticketing scheme, we are also introducing more staff to our concourses so that they are able to help passengers face-to-face."
Starving dogs started to eat body of their owner. Open verdict recorded over death at horrifying scene. A Winchester woman was partially eaten by her own starving dogs after her dead body lay undiscovered for days, an inquest heard. Noel Bainham, 61, was found dead in January after a suspected collapse at her house in Winnell. A concerned friend discovered the horrifying scene, with parts of her body torn off by her pets, after no one answered the front door. The inquest on Thursday could not determine how she died, despite evidence of a drug overdose, because the trapped animals ate parts of her vital organs. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how Grant Donovan rang Ms. Bainham's doorbell in Lime Tree Walk on January the 17th. The dogs, a Jack Russell and Staffordshire Bull Terrier, barked and jumped at the door, but there was no other answer. Mr. Donovan entered through an unlocked back door to find the house covered in dog fowl. Miss Bainham lay mutilated on the landing. "This was the most horrifying thing I have ever seen," he said in a statement read to the inquest. "I could not look at her long, so I just came away and called 999. Detectives searched the scene, but could not find evidence of foul play. Ms. Bainham, a former jeweller, was in her dressing room, dressing gown, and had run a bath. Scratch marks on her chest indicated the dogs may have tried to revive her, D.C. Wesley Arnold told Winchester Coroner's Court. Home office pathologist Dr. Amanda Jeffrey told the inquest that she had probably died a few days before she was found, but the dogs complicated the post-mortem by eating body parts which could have held the key to explaining her death. Dr. Jeffrey said Miss Bainham was likely to have been killed by a combined effect of a variety of drugs found in her system, be it an overdose or build-up over time. It could have been so many other things, she added. Miss Bainham suffered from bipolar disorder and chronic alcoholism and was prescribed a variety of medication. Blood tests found a range of drugs in her system, including potentially toxic levels of painkillers. Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short recorded an open verdict. He ruled there was no evidence of suicide or an accidental fall, but said Ms. Bainham may have had a stroke.
Gold ring cut off finger. Winchester's firefighters cut a gold ring off the finger of a youth at a fire station early Monday morning. The youngster was taken by a social worker to Winchester Fire Station on Eastern Lane, Winnall, with the ring stuck on his middle finger. The fire service have special cutters with a titanium blade that did the job in seconds at around 2:30 a.m., said the watch manager, Chris Roper.
Flower pots shortlisted for award. A pub near Alsford has been named as one of Camera's local pubs of the year. The Flower Pots in Cheriton was chosen for the Southern Hampshire region as one of the more than 200 selected nationwide by the Campaign for Real Ale. Those nominated will be in with a chance to win their regional heats in a quest to be named National Pub of the Year, announced in 2016.
World records for ice swimming pair. Duo feel on top of the world after Arctic feat. A pair of Hampshire swimmers are on top of the world after breaking ice swimming world records in the Arctic Circle. Kate Steeles-Fryatt and Rory Fitzgerald swam a kilometre in freezing cold water to make history at the first ice swimming world championships in Russia. The swimmers set world records in their age categories after a gruelling race at 0 degrees. They trained for the brutal conditions with a series of ice baths and drills in the Itchen, Hamble and Avon rivers. Last month's championships opened with an Olympic-style ceremony in the snow at Semenovnyovsky Lake, near the remote northern part of Murmansk. The ice was 70 centimetres thick. Kate's time of 19 minutes and 30 set the global record for women aged 45 and over. You just feel on top of the world. You feel totally ecstatic that you've done it, she said. It was very difficult, extremely tough, but I just kept swimming and thinking it's an excellent opportunity. I don't want to let anyone down. The 45-year-old of Ashton Close, Bishop's Waltham, got into the extreme sport after 2 years of open water swimming. Rory, a 56-year-old accountant from Timsbury near Rumsey, finished with a time of 40 minutes and 22 seconds, setting a world record for the over-50s. The post-swimming euphoria was contagious, Rory said.
Volunteers needed to help the elderly. A charity solely dedicated to tackling loneliness and isolation among older people is at risk of closing due to a lack of volunteers. Contact the Elderly, which aims to help people aged 75 and over by providing support and companionship, is appealing urgently for Winchester volunteers to spare a few hours a week for the city's older residents. They host monthly Sunday tea parties for small groups who are picked up and dropped off at home by voluntary drivers. Contact the Elderly's National Volunteer Support Officer, Suzanne Hyland, said, "Anyone who can spare a couple of hours one Sunday a week, has a driving licence, a car and a capacity for drinking tea is eligible. It's not a big commitment, and our volunteers get out as much out of it as the experience of our older guests." For more information, contact Ms. Ireland on 0207 8812 361. I'll read that again. 0207 8812 361.
Council warning over cold calls scam. A scam warning has gone out to Hampshire residents after reports of callers claiming to work for the County Council. Unsolicited callers are asking whether residents have had a workplace or road accident in a suspected phishing exercise for personal information, Hampshire County Council's Trading Standards Service said. In a statement, it said, trading standards suspect these calls to be phishing attempts, that is, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, attempts to gain personal information and are concerned that money may be asked for. Advice is to never give out personal information and never to pay any money over the telephone to unknown persons. Hampshire County Council will not cold call to ask for money over the telephone.
Young mum shares story of abuse and newfound hope. A young mum who was abused as a child and now hopes to start university as a mature student told a spellbound audience how family support charity Homestart helped to turn her life around. Homestart Winchester and Districts is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. As part of the national Homestart movement, it is the largest family support charity in the UK. Trained volunteers visit parents and children in their homes on a weekly basis. The mum who spoke at the organisation's celebratory dinner said, "From a young age I had it tough, and when I was in my early 20s I had it tougher. I can only say this now because I have something to compare my life with, and believe me, it's worlds apart from what I knew. From when I was little I suffered child abuse. My mother died when I was young and I've been exploited nearly all my life by bad men. Making the move to Hampshire was the first step in making my new life, and I wanted to dedicate my world to my son. Homestart was the glue that kept me together and helped me when I needed it the most. They showed me kindness, honesty, respect, and were non-judgmental. This was all stuff I knew nothing about. My volunteer and the Homestart staff made me feel I was worthy and trusted. They encouraged me to believe in myself and become a better person and a better mum. I've now started working with young people who misuse drugs and alcohol and women who suffer domestic violence. For 2 years I've been studying counselling and mental health issues and I'm hoping to start a degree next year. My aim is to help others the way only a few have helped me. I'm truly grateful for everything Homestart have done for me, and I know all too well the change it can make to someone's life." That very personal journey represented just one of nearly 450 families which Homestart Winchester has supported since it began in 2005. The anniversary celebration took place at the Bengal Sage in Winchester and was hosted by local businessman and father of three, Miff Kayum. A range of supporters and fundraisers joined the supper party, including local businesses Utilita, Culverlands Press and milliner Deborah Dalton. Homestart coordinator Liz Stannard joined just over a year ago. She said, "This charity is all about people, and I have met and worked with some really amazing people since I joined. But most of all, I have met with some incredible families from all sorts of backgrounds facing all sorts of challenges. It's been a privilege to listen to their stories. Sometimes they have made me laugh, and sometimes I have been moved to tears."
TV chef takes a pop at local supermarket. While it seems Winchester draws in TV chefs like moths to a flame, there's one foodie who's been all too quick to criticise one of the local supermarkets. Twitter saw James Martin, known for having started out at the Hotel du Vin on Southgate Street, take issue with Tesco in Winnell for not stocking British meat. In his rant, he claimed 95% of the lamb wasn't British, along with a photo of New Zealand produce. He was retweeted 1,500 times by his many followers, so serve him right.
Post office to be renovated. A modernised post office is set to open in Alsford next month. The Southern Cooperative store in West Street opened the new service on Friday, May the 1st. Offering longer opening hours and extra facilities. There will be three modern counters, as well as two screened positions, open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. Services include tax renewals, bill payments, banking, benefits, travel money, postage, home shopping returns, and local collect. Gary Trodd, Post Office Services Manager at the Southern Cooperative, said, "We are very supportive of the changes, as it's seen as a positive move forward for customers by making the post office's services more conveniently available whenever our store is open. The post office will close on Wednesday, April the 22nd, from 5:30 p.m. for refurbishment. Alternative branches can be found at Ropley, at the Courtyard in Church Street, and the Winchester Post Office in W.H. Smith in the High Street." Adrian Skinner, area manager, said, "We know how important post office services are to residents in Alresford, and we are confident this vibrant, modern post office at the heart of the community will be popular. The modernisation is part of a major government investment programme."
Hundreds join protest over Gurkha pensions. Nearly 200 Nepalese rallied in Winchester last week to condemn the Ministry of Defence over their pensions. Protesters from pressure group Gurkha Satyagraha travelled from all over Britain on Friday to demand parity between British and Nepalese soldiers. In a passionate speech to crowds outside the historic Westgate, Director Gyan Raj Ray said the Gurkha Welfare Trust, a care charity, was lying about veterans' financial needs to save the government money. They were protesting an event at Winchester's Gurkha Museum, attended by Trust and MOD officials, celebrating 200 years of Nepalese service to the Crown. "They are bullying us, exploiting us," Mr. Ray told the Chronicle. "Thousands of people died in the war. There was no compensation. Many of them did not get any pensions or have benefit at all. The MOD has been bullying us for many, many years. They are trying to celebrate the anniversary of our good relations, they say. If they gave us pensions, whatever they should get, then celebrate. We do not celebrate." Mr. Ray, who in 2013 launched a hunger strike outside Downing Street, added that the Trust is lying to the general public, their donors, those who give charity. "They say in Nepal, we don't have little money to survive with," he said. "That's why they are giving us little money." William Shuttlewood, director of the Gurkha Welfare Trust, strongly denied allegations of lying. He told the Chronicle, "The Trust is very disappointed to learn that Satyagraha intend to disrupt the celebration of 200 years of Gurkha service in 2015. It should be an anniversary that we all celebrate, placing our grievances and politics to one side. The Trust does not engage in the politics of Gurkha service. Our business is the delivery of welfare to those in need. We would refute absolutely allegations that the Trust has been lying about the welfare of veterans in the UK."
Toxic air health alert. Health chiefs issued a health warning over dangerous toxic air mixed with a dust cloud from the Sahara. People in Hampshire with underlying medical and respiratory conditions, including asthma, were urged to take extra precautions last Friday. Vulnerable people were urged to reduce their physical activity. They include adults and children with lung problems, adults with heart problems, older people, and those with other ongoing health issues. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs said the South was the worst affected, with the Met Office warning of very high levels of pollution across Hampshire. The warning came just 3 weeks after the last wave of smog, but last Friday posed more of a risk as the warm, sunny weather mixed with Saharan dust and pollution from both the UK and Europe exacerbated the problem. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust was asked for a comment about the local impact, but did not respond.
Plans for solar farms scaled down. Developers have scaled down plans for a major solar farm between Bishop's Waltham and Waltham Chase. Solar Fields has submitted a revised proposal for a facility west of the B2177 Winchester Road, which could power 3,636 homes. The proposed site has been reduced from 74 to 64 acres, cutting annual power output from 15 megawatts to 12 megawatts. Other changes include more planting, taller hedges for screening, and a pledge to keep the farm from expanding into fields west of the proposed site. Solar Fields director Mark Candlish said feedback from an exhibition in November was extremely positive. The firm is offering the community up to 10% in shares. Residents and businesses have until the end of the month to submit comments to Winchester City Council.
Pubs are opening as well as closing down. It is an accepted truism that pubs are closing at the rate of knots. Campaign group Camera is always wailing about closures. So Belgarum thought he would investigate the phenomenon for the City of Winchester using a fine journalistic resource, memory. A quarter of a century ago, there were 52 pubs in the city, excluding private clubs and hotels. Since 1990, 14 have closed or been converted into restaurants. They are the Stanmore Hotel, demolished; New Queen's Head Stanmore, ditto; the White Horse St Cross, converted into a house; the Wheat Sheaf St Cross, also a home; the Heart in Hand, demolished; the Ship, now a nursery; Prince of Wales Hyde, now flats; the Eagle, ditto; South Western, until recently the Registry Office; Theatre Bar; Bird in Hand, demolished; Chimneys, weak, demolished; Abbey Bar, Guildhall. Conversions: the King's Arms, now the Black Rat; Forrester Arms, now the Corner House; Mash Tun, now El Sabio. 16 out of 52, just over a quarter. But wait, a number have opened. The Black Bottle, Slug and Lettuce, O'Neill's, Old Jailhouse, and Black, White, Red. Take those five into account. That is 11 closures out of 52. A hardly earth-shattering 21%. So, where does Camera get its worrying figures from? Perhaps it does not distinguish between pubs that close permanently and those that later reopen. There have been a number in Winchester, including the Bishop on the Bridge and the Rising Sun.
Unseen photo of Olivier discovered. A previously unseen picture of Hollywood great Laurence Olivier during his years living in Winchester has been unearthed. The actor was based at Worthy Down, north of the city, during the Second World War, while he was serving in the Royal Navy's Fleet Air Arm. His wife, actress Vivian Leigh, also moved back to Hampshire from Los Angeles, and the newly married couple rented a bungalow in Headbourne Worthy. As a naval aviator, Olivier flew a range of planes from the busy air station named HMS Kestrel during its years under naval control. The recently found black-and-white photograph, stored in Worthy Down's archives, shows the actor standing next to the huge propellers of a Westland Lysander in full flying kit, complete with leather hat, goggles and parachute. Although one of the most brilliant actors of his generation, Olivier was a terrible pilot, who was eventually released by the Royal Navy to return to acting full-time and help revitalise London's Old Vic.
Teenagers reveal vision for a new cafe. It could be the railroad eatery which will bring new life to a Winchester beauty spot. And it has all been designed by teenagers. A team of budding architects took over a city office last week to design a cyclist's cafe from an old train carriage on a former railway embankment. It is hoped the Handlebar Cafe will open at Garnier Road next year for food, drink, bike repairs and views of the Itchen Valley. Youngsters gave up 4 days of their Easter break to build a viable plan, covering the offices of St. Thomas Street-based Architecture PLB in sketches, models and creative prompts. They, along with a group of Portsmouth University students, are marketing, designing, planning, modelling and funding the project from scratch with professional help. The design is the brainchild of Peter Simmons student Alec Grice, who first worked on it at sessions with workshop charity Spud Youth. Nobody seems to know quite what Spud stands for. Anyway, I'd say it was a good idea before, and now it's a great idea, said Alex, with thanks to the Portsmouth students. With the backing of business and Winchester City Council, it is hoped the cafe can be a social enterprise, offering apprenticeships and work for the disabled, unemployed and students. The team was helped with technical details by local engineers, architects and planners who gave free advice. Retirement home and project sponsor Pegasus Life helped the students to create a viable business plan. It's great that we've got a group of people around here that want to come together and make this happen, said Spud Youth Director Mark Drury. Spud, which is seeking further commercial sponsors, will hold a public exhibition of its plans on Monday, June the 8th. And this article is accompanied by a picture of the students, Nicholas Tangaris, Joshua Snow, Alex Grice holding up a model of the railway carriage and the interior of it, Sebby MacDonald and George Judge. And they all look very pleased and satisfied with their new project.
On that very positive and pleasing story, we end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell and Ken Clemenson, and also thanks to our various technical teams. And thank you to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.